a lot of teams have this unspoken rule of like, you know, you don't call things out, right? You don't say the truth. You say everything's fine, like we were talking about earlier. And so I think that's really frustrating to people who want things to be the most effective possible. And that's a lot of people who work in tech, you know, because they tend to care about efficiency and all of that. And so I think just giving them space to tell you what's wrong can be really powerful. Just asking those questions in a non-judgmental way.
Welcome to the People Stack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk. I am a career coach for tech managers and founder of the People Stack. My guest for this episode is April Wenzel. She is founder of Compassionate Coding. Welcome, April.
Hello, nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Great to talk with you today. Super excited about our conversation today, April. And so first, what I'd like to learn more about, and I'm sure my guests are going to find out more about as well, is tell us about Compassionate Coding. What's the mission and what is your role as founder?
Sure, yeah. So the mission of Compassionate Coding is really to spread a new approach to software development that really puts the humans first. So the reason compassion is in the name is that for me, compassion is about reducing suffering. And after working in tech for a while, I saw so much suffering in so many different ways in the tech industry. I thought what we really need a boost of is compassion. So Compassionate Coding is about prioritizing and making decisions based on what will reduce suffering for your users, for your coworkers, for yourself, and then for humanity at large. So it's kind of a way of framing how we make daily decisions in software development.
Awesome. I love it. And what do you see your role as founder? And maybe the classic question of if you had a regular day, how do you spend your days? Everyone's always curious about that. They want to look into your fishbowl. No, what's it like to be a founder of such an organization?
Yeah, no, that's always an interesting question. And it's a fun one because I really don't have typical days, but I can still answer that question. But yeah, so as the founder, really Compassionate Coding is a really personal thing for me because I was in the tech industry and still am. But after being in it for about 10 years, I found some very specific kind of problems that I noticed in my environment. And so I combined that with my interest in compassion, which came from when I went vegan, I learned about compassion. Mm-hmm. And so for me, and I mentioned this because Compassionate Coding really, as a founder, I kind of created the framework for what it means, Compassionate Coding, and designed curriculum for how to teach Compassionate Coding, and I kind of evangelized Compassionate Coding. So as a founder, I really do a lot of different things. So on a daily basis, I mean, you know, this is doing podcasts. I do a lot of that. I was just earlier this week in Vancouver for a Node.js conference. I was keynoting that. So it's a lot of speaking, things like that. Next week, I'm headed to New York to facilitate a Compassionate Coding workshop at a company, at a client company. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of different things like that, a lot of conversations. And sometimes those are about people and about management and things. And sometimes they're very technical discussions like, you know, how do we re-architect this in a more compassionate way or whatever. So it really is there's a lot of variety, which is why I love it, because I love variety and I'm never bored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like you're having a ton of fun with it as well. And it sounds like the perfect fit for you. It sounds like you've really found your place, at least your place right now in your career, that, like you mentioned, like you could talk about the people stuff and the management stuff, but because you spend so long as in the tech industry, as a software engineer, as a developer, you can speak that language when a lot of folks who are leadership coaches or career coaches may not be able to do that. And so I'm curious, I love learning about other people's career journeys and sort of talking about that, because I think it's an important way to learn about the way that this stuff works. That career journeys are often not such a straight line. They're often more of like a squiggly line. So I think it's fun to and really informative to learn about career journeys. So I'd like to hear a little bit about yours in terms of starting out as a software engineer, as a developer, and now you have your own company and you're helping people, you're helping companies and software teams make software more human and more compassionate. So I'm curious about the journey as a whole, but especially the transition from being essentially an employee who is a coder and a developer to someone who now you own your own business.
Yeah, so it's been interesting. I always talk about how I'm a proud job hopper because, you know, I embrace that squiggly line that you mentioned, which is that, you know, I've had a lot of different jobs. In 10 years, I had almost as many jobs in that time. Mm-hmm. And I started off, you know, I studied computer science, kind of had the traditional computer science background. And I started off at a big company at Sony implementing software. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was there for less than a year, and at most, and then I went on and I joined some other startups and whatnot. I really did job hop around. And the reason for that is I would have fun, like learning about the company and learning the new technology that we'd be using. But then I'd always get to a point where it just wasn't that satisfying. It wasn't clear that I was doing anything really to help the world. It just wasn't, I don't know. At the end of the day, I still felt just not very fulfilled. And that was just doing kind of random software jobs. So then I started to look for mission-driven companies. And the one that I liked the most was probably this company that was building an app to detect autism in children using machine learning. And so that felt meaningful because we were trying to help parents get early intervention for their kids with autism. And I led the engineering team there, and that was really rewarding. But then it still got to that point where the company started to move in a direction that I didn't really agree with, I guess, on an ethical basis. And so for me, it was hard because even though I was leading the engineering team, I wasn't the CEO, right? So I only had so much say in the direction. And so I think that, and then, you know, I had another experience after that where I worked, I was also an engineering lead. And that team, I was the first female software engineer on a team of about 40, which was interesting. Okay. And you know, I was trying to push for more diversity and that sort of thing. But once again, I wasn't the head of the company, so there was only so much I could do. So then I realized, you know, if I really want to make change, like I need to do something bigger than this. You know, I can't just be kind of a cog in the machine. I really need to do something bigger. And that's really why I decided to transition out and go it on my own and start Compassionate Coding.
Okay, great. I'd like to hear a little bit about that experience of being the first female software engineer in a team of 40. It sounds like that was one of the details that stood out to me, that perhaps just in hearing the story could have been a pivotal point, could have been a turning point for you. So what was that experience like, and how much did that experience make it be for you like, okay, this is really what's inspired me to go and do this on my own?
Yeah, because that was the last job that I had before starting Compassionate Coding. Well, when I joined, I mean, I was pretty much used to being the only woman in the room at most jobs. At that place, I had high hopes for the company because one of their values that they stated was kindness. And I thought, oh, that's really great. Like, that'll be good. But what happened was, and so I thought there would be hope because if they value kindness, then of course they'd value, you know, diversity and inclusion, because I see that as a way of being very kind, right, is to include people. Unfortunately, their kindness was more like kind of the fake nice thing that I always try to say that compassion is not, like where you don't speak up about things because they're uncomfortable to talk about. And so as the first woman software engineer on the team, I was of course, I didn't want to remain the only woman on the team.
Sure.
So I would notice things like we'd say, someone on the team would say, we need to hire a really good iOS guy for the team. And I would say, hey, you know, when you use language like that, you're setting up an image in people's head, a pattern of what we're looking for, and it's going to be a guy. So when we interview, we're setting up, you know, ourselves to hire a guy, a man. Yeah. And I would speak up about these things, and it made, you know, because people weren't comfortable talking about these things, I got the feedback that people were afraid of me. That's okay. An actual quote, April, people are afraid of you, which is kind of hilarious because, you know, I have a small stature and I was the only woman on the team. And so for a lot of like reasons, it's kind of hilarious that they were scared of me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I kept trying to push for change, and it was hard. And I thought, you know what, it's really hard to make big changes when you're just a little thing in the organization, just like a little cog, because there's so many political things and there's so much momentum to the culture. Whereas now, when I can go into companies, you know, they listen because I'm not involved in the politics. Like I can just call things out like they are and teams listen. You know, I can be that voice of truth, that kind of objective, so to speak, third party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And there's so much to unpack there. the irony of a 40 or 39 men or who knows how many men being afraid of the one woman on the team. It's ironic. It's like you said, it's almost funny in a way, but not funny because it clearly shows a lack of awareness of what might actually be going on. So there's definitely that piece of it. And then you had mentioned fake nice. I'd like to hear more about what you mean by that. What I take from it is that it's like, we're going to be nice to one another. In other words, we're not going to talk about the hard stuff. We're not going to talk about the fact that we're scared or uncomfortable or the fact that there is only one woman on this team. We're going to be nice and we're just going to avoid all conflict whatsoever. And that's actually not good or helpful in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it was about the lack of diversity on the team, but really about anything, like the direction of the company, like, oh yeah, everything's fine. Everything's always fine. Even when there were glaring problems with the company and the team and the direction and everything. And it was just, I'm a very direct person, which, you know, people are sometimes surprised, compassionate coding, because they think, oh, compassion, she's going to be this really nice, person. And I try to be kind, but I'm also very direct because I think that it's compassionate to be direct because, again, compassion is about alleviating suffering. And to alleviate suffering, you have to dive into these difficult issues, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I actually just had a flashback when you were talking about the company, I've used to work in an environment where it was like, everything is all fine. Everything's great. You're doing great. I'm great. You're great. Never talked about the fact that maybe we can get better. You know, maybe we have some weaknesses that we can build upon. And then what ends up happening in those kinds of environments is that for example, when people go up for promotion or something like that, it's like, oh no, we're not going to give it to you because you're not good enough, right? And then it's like that during that one time of the year or whatever, once every 5 years or whatever, how often it happens, it's this whole thing opens up because you're not talking about it on a day-to-day basis. Or things happen where it ends up being this big blow up kind of situation and it feels like it's so much worse than it actually could have been if you had been having those conversations moving forward. It's about the way that I kind of like to look at it is there's nice and then there's kind. Nice is that surface, on the surface it's fake, but okay, I'm going to be nice. I'm going to give you a compliment, even if I don't really mean it. But then kind is okay, I'm going to tell you the hard truths, even if it hurts a little bit, because you're absolutely right that in order to reduce suffering, we need to understand the nature of that suffering to begin with.
Mm-hmm. That's well said. Yeah.
So that sounded like it was really a pivotal point for you in your career, being the first female, at least in that environment, being the first female and kind of seeing all right, this isn't working, and then saying, all right, I want to go move off on my own, and so now I can shape the mission and I can shape the voice. Is that kind of how it happens? I'm always curious, being an entrepreneur myself, a small business owner myself, sort of how that happens, because it is a leap and it is a little bit scary. It is a little bit risky to go from being an employee and having that sense of security, even if you're experiencing some really negative stuff on a day-to-day basis from a social point of view, that it can be absolutely a leap of faith to kind of move forward with that. So what was the thing, or maybe it was a variety of things that made you say, all right, I'm going to go and do this, and I'm going to build this business on my own, and my mission is to build more compassionate coding?
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like for a lot of entrepreneurs, it's a similar thing where it was kind of a gradual thing, but also it was kind of all at once. It was both ways, because on one hand, I've always wanted to start my own company ever since I graduated college, because, I was a very good student. I was very, I could obey authority in the sense of, doing well in school, but I always had this inner kind of independent spirit that I didn't really get to embrace in school. And so once I was done with all the formal schooling, I really had this strong desire to do my own thing. I even tried to do a startup with some friends from school when I first graduated, but we just were very inexperienced and nothing really came of it. So we got regular jobs. But so I always had in the back of my head I wanted to do it, but I never thought of like apps that I felt that passionate about building or like a website or whatever. I was like, like there's kind of enough of those out there. I mean, I don't know. Like it never struck me that I needed to build some app or something. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's why I hadn't started a company yet. And then at that moment at that company, it was pivotal, I think, because it was sort of the accumulation of like a decade of like all these experiences. And it was kind of like that final straw, that last straw. Mm-hmm. And I say it all happened like, gradually, but also all at once, because I actually kind of rage quit that job. So when I got that feedback of that people were afraid of me, I gave notice that day. Like I didn't actually just like walk out. I gave notice and it was, I mean, I left on good terms technically, but in my head, I always think I kind of rage quit a little bit, because as soon as I heard that feedback, I was like, you know what? I've done so much to try to help things here. And I even did help bring on some women there, but I was like, you know, this is just, I feel like I'm kind of restrained. Like there was only so much progress I could make. So it was really in that moment. And then I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to start, but I knew I was going to start something. And then it was just great timing, because it was that year too that I went vegan, and I went to this retreat about compassion and what compassion means. And they had all this research on compassion from like a scientific point of view, like what it means in the brain and how we evolve to be compassionate. And so for me, you know, coming from a STEM background, I was like, oh, so this isn't just a touchy-feely thing. It's like there's real science here. Mm-hmm. And so that, like, I latched onto compassion, and then I was like, this is what's missing from the tech industry, is there's like zero compassion. It's like all about machines and you know, efficiency, and there's very little room for the human side. And compassionate coding, the alliteration, I always like alliteration where mm-hmm. the words start with the same letter. So mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, this is what I'm gonna do. And because I felt so strongly about it. And I thought, how can you go wrong trying to bring compassion, more compassion into the world, right? So it seems like a pretty easy thing to stick by.
Oh, that's a great story. From, you know, being in a really, really tough situation to having a bunch of guys telling you that they're afraid of you, to leaving, to having the guts, to having the strength to quit and to say, you know what, this is not the environment for me. And then knowing you're going to do something, you're not quite sure what. And then I want to ask about the vegan thing, because that's clearly an important part of this story here. And then it seems like everything just kind of came together. And that's how, you know, isn't that cool how we can have these experiences in life where it's like we're not really sure where we're going to go. But if, you know, you just follow where the next step leads you. And then, mm-hmm. you know, for you, it sounded like it was that retreat on compassion that sort of mm-hmm. like brought it together for you. They're like, this is what I want to do for the tech world. It's all about compassion. So isn't that so cool, like how that can happen? And it's like, wow, it all kind of comes together. Even though I didn't have a plan, the plan forms afterwards.
It really is. And, you know, I've typically always been kind of a type A personality where I wanted to plan out everything and be in control and all of that. But as I've embraced compassion and, you know, started meditating and all these very soft things that I would have made fun of in the past as a software developer, I've one, become happier. And two, I've kind of like released a little bit of my grasping of everything in life and trying to control everything. And I have started to just trust a little more, you know?
Yeah. I love that. I always seem to think that sometimes I'm a little bit too grippy on my goals. You gotta have goals, Jen. You gotta have goals. I'm like, what if I just let go of it just a little bit and then open and create that space for awesomeness to happen? So that's great. I can totally relate to that. And so I said I was going to ask about becoming vegan. How important is that in this story? Was that something that you decided to do and seems to fit in, or was that like something that like intentionally that you did that was part of this almost like rebirth of part two of your career?
Yeah, I think it's totally that rebirth. I like that image. Yeah, I think it's totally that, because I went vegan. So I was already vegetarian for a few years, and then the like two companies before my last, or a company before my last one, like that kind of ended because I mentioned like going in different directions ethically that I didn't like. And so that kind of ended on a sad note. And I sort of hit this moment where I was just, you know, rethinking my whole life and stuff. And I actually around that time too, because I had been very involved in like drinking for like social work stuff, like going to happy hour, drinking all the time. And I decided to take a time off from drinking at all. And so I got like very sort of clear headed, where I was just very, you know, trying to think about my health and think about my mind and everything. And that's actually what inspired me to go vegan, as I was, you know, thinking about who I wanted to be in the world from this very clear headed space. And I was like, you know, I'm already vegetarian, and then I learned about more suffering that happens for food. And I was like, so I want to go the full way and become vegan. And so I became vegan. So it's funny, because I became vegan because I took this break because of this other career thing. So the whole veganism is tied very closely to my career. And then the next step after that was it leading me to start a company. So So yeah, it was all very closely tied together.
That's so cool. Such a great, again, such a great story.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It's awesome to hear. And so at this point, let's get specific about compassion and being compassionate. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear your definition of it, you know, what it is. And then let's talk about the how we can all be more compassionate in, you know, whether you're a software developer or a leader or just in life. But let's start with the what, so that we're on the same page here. What is compassion to you?
Yeah, so I am inspired by the UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center. They have a definition, and I'll paraphrase it here, but I use it in enough of my talks that it'll probably be pretty close. But it's that compassion is the ability to recognize suffering in others and the desire to alleviate that suffering. So empathy is about, you know, feeling what others are feeling. So I see compassion as a more active form of empathy. It's like empathy plus action, because you actually want to take steps to alleviate that suffering.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I'm very action driven myself. So I love that, thinking about empathy, which is, I think, is something that a lot of us can understand, that we've all had those moments of empathy, but that it's like the compassion is taking it a step further. Okay, what can I do? What can I do to help? Because I don't want to see other people suffer. That's awesome.
Yes.
So let's talk about the how. So one thing, you know, how can we be more compassionate with our coding, with our leading, and just, you know, in general, how we live? And one thing that I wanted to follow up on that perhaps maybe relevant here, you can let me know if what this ball that I'm throwing at the wall is sticky or not. but you mentioned meditation and some other things that you're doing now that your former self, your past self, may have laughed at yourself for doing it. But I'm wondering, in terms of meditation and mindfulness, what role does that play in your life as far as being more compassionate?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's essential because, and whether or not it's formal meditation or not, I think that, like, and myself included, but our society in general is moving so quickly, and it's really hard to care about anyone, including yourself, when you're moving so quickly that you don't even take a breath. And so I think taking those moments of meditation to have very deliberate breaths, I do yoga too, and, you know, meditation sometimes ties in there. And those are so essential to just me, I think, this new person I've become, where I am like just happier again and a little more calm in the world. And when I don't do it, I notice consequences in my life. Like I kind of get back into old bad habits, and I am, you know, get kind of bitter feelings in my head and resentment and whatever. I'm easily irritated, things like that. And so I think some sort of slowing down, whether or not people are comfortable calling it meditation, whatever, but taking some deep breaths now and then, or taking a walk in nature, getting away from your computer and your other devices for a little while, I think can be really powerful. I think, like, whenever I talk about building compassion, the first step really is just taking those slow moments, because compassion is only something that you can build in those slow, quiet moments. It's not something you can do really efficiently and really quickly.
Okay. Yeah. And I was going to ask how this comes through in your training and in your consulting and in the speaking that you do, how you encourage other folks to do this. So it sounds like you're encouraging people to have these slow moments, that's number one. In order to be compassionate, we need to start with ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's just really, taking a moment to slow down, because what you really need to build compassion is also being able to reflect on your own actions and on your observations of others and how they're behaving. And to do that, you need space like space and time to do that. And so that's why slowing down is always the first step. And that in itself can work wonders in your life, whether or not you do anything else with it. Even just the slowing down sometimes can be really powerful. But then when you do combine it with reflection on the suffering that you feel, the suffering you see in others, that's like another, that's the next step kind of up from there, is noticing suffering that's happening.
Yeah. And it almost feels like because of who we are as humans, and we have this desire to connect with others and to have this connection, and that empathy is one of those things that just kind of, it's there. It's almost like we have to fight for it to not be there. It's almost like through these slow moments, through this reflection, it opens up this place where it's like, okay, now I feel like I can be more compassionate. So it's almost like if you just do those two things, like if you do, you know, just the slow moments plus the reflection, that we all know how to be compassionate. We all know how to do that. But there are absolutely things that we can do to kind of stack on top of that to do even more. Hi, everyone. We'll get back to the interview in a jiffy. But first, are you a tech manager? In other words, do you lead teams of geeks through long-term complex projects? Do you feel like you're wasting precious time going to useless meetings, dealing with administrative nonsense, and working late nights? Are you working 50 plus hours a week, but don't have the salary to show for it? It doesn't need to be that way. You can build thriving, high-performing teams who produce a measurable positive impact while earning the premium salary you deserve. Oh, and you don't have to work your butt off to get there. If this sounds like the kind of success you're striving for, then go to jenbunk.com/webinar to reserve a spot in my free masterclass. I share the 4 shifts that my tech manager clients made to achieve badass career transformation. That's jenbunk.com/webinar. Without further ado, please enjoy the rest of the interview. So what else, you know, sort of getting to the other hows, how can we be more compassionate beyond these slow moments, beyond the reflection? Are there other strategies or tactics that you recommend to people?
Yeah, so I always like to keep it simple because I feel like, you know, people, when they have too much to do, they feel overwhelmed. So I give little simple things, that suggestions that people can do. Like when you're standing in line somewhere, like standing in line at the store, you can just spend a few minutes in your head thinking about the people around you and thinking, I wonder what their life is like, you know. It's especially good to do, like, if you're driving, and especially when somebody cuts you off or does something that annoys you, to just take a breath in that moment. So when you're feeling that stress, and intervene instead of letting your fight or flight take over, and instead of, you know, thinking, you know, cruel thoughts about that person in your head and being judgmental, instead think, huh, I wonder if they're rushing to get home because they have a kid waiting for them, or, you know, maybe they had a really bad day at work and that's why they're honking at me, because they just need to take out that frustration. And because that's really what compassion is it's understanding that everybody suffers. It's a universal thing. And then it can kind of calm you down, because it's not that it's excusing their behavior. Like, it doesn't mean, oh yeah, it's fine that they cut me off because they have an excuse. It's more, oh, they're just a flawed human being like I am, and they're going through something. And so, you know, I like to use those examples because they're kind of universal, and it really applies to then, you know, to take it back to coding. It's really, you know, sometimes people will assume the worst in what somebody does, like, oh, they messed this up just to annoy me, or they're trying to throw me under the bus, or all these things. And instead thinking, huh, I wonder what's going on in their life. Like, maybe they're having a difficult time at home or whatever. And so I think that the third thing there, kind of them getting at, is when you're in a difficult moment, to try to interrupt your reflex response of being aggressive and defensive and whatever, and instead reach for a kinder, more compassionate interpretation of what's going on.
Yeah, and that can be really hard to do, especially, like, I don't know, take the either example, whether it's when somebody cuts you off, or if you think about the coding example, or for those of us like me who don't code, but the way that I kind of relate to coding is, you know, I'm a writer. And so writing and coding are very similar to one another, especially when you're doing like group projects. And so it's just, especially if you've been in situations when you really feel like people have been trying to throw you under the bus in the past, like, and you actually have a lot of evidence that, like, you know what, they really were trying to, like, derail me. And I like what you said about it's not excusing their behavior, like, especially if they were being, you know, a jerk, or, you know, that this is something that they did, that it could be a learning moment for both parties. So it's not like, oh, no, it's okay, you can totally walk all over me. But it is sort of like being aware that they chose to do that behavior for a particular reason. I wonder why. And so that can be hard. That can be hard to balance, which is why this doesn't happen more often, right? You know, if it were easy, it would always happen. So I appreciate, you know, those examples, and I appreciate the simplicity of it as well, because it is kind of hard to, like, if you were just kind of thrown into situations like, what do I do? And you have like 10 different strategies, you're like, which one do I choose? To just kind of be aware of what's going on with everyone around you, and being more aware of what their suffering is, right? You know, sort of going back to that original definition, that it's recognizing that suffering, being aware of it, and then really wanting to alleviate it as well.
I think so. And I do think too that it gets easier with practice. So it's true that it's hard, but like as you practice, and you know, the world is a stressful place, so we really get opportunities to practice every day. It does get easier. Like I have found that it gets easier because your mind will start to, you know, build those patterns of like, okay, when something's annoying me, instead of, you know, like I know what I can do, instead I can interpret it this way or reframe it this way. And it, so I the encouraging thing I've found is that it does get easier with time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a point that's well taken as well. So what about in team kind of situations? Have you found certain strategies to work better in terms of like being more compassionate when like team strife and team arguments can happen?
Yeah. So a lot of what I do like with actual companies is finding out what those conflicts are in the team and what those difficulties are and trying to unpack that. And as a sort of third party observer, I can come to find, you know, I can kind of observe what's bothering both sides and try to apply my own compassion to understand the suffering that's going on. And because I think sometimes people don't remember that if somebody's doing something unkind, it's almost always because they're suffering. Because, you know, it seems obvious, but it's just, you know, it's worth remembering that happy people don't go around trying to hurt other people because they're too busy being happy. And so anytime somebody's doing something that annoys you, they've got to be suffering in some way, or they don't realize it's annoying you, one or the other. And so in teams, what my role usually is to understand what that suffering is on both sides, and then to try to help them come to some resolution and to build that empathy and compassion for each other.
Absolutely. I think your point is really well taken, April, in terms of thinking about when people do something that may be mean or uncivil or something like that, or not compassionate, that there's something about them, that there's something that they're not happy about, because happy people don't do that. Happy people are going to respond and act in a much different way. So I think that really opens up an area for seeing, okay, why is it that this person might be acting this way? How might they be suffering? And potentially, how can I help them? So are there questions or tactics or strategies that you would suggest in those particular situations where it's like somebody might be just like going off on like a rage attack or something like that? Are there things that you have found that kind of work better to kind of like get them back down to earth and sort of recognize maybe that what they're doing may not be productive or helpful?
Yeah. So I think, you know, a common thing that we see on teams is, you know, they have like that one jerk on the team that's always complaining or is always being negative, but, you know, it's really productive, and so they keep the person on the team. And what I found with those people, and I've actually bonded with them pretty well when on team, is just because when you try to uncover it, like why that person's so negative and why they're complaining all the time, it's because they have a vision in their head of the team being much more efficient or effective or, you know, building things in a better way, whatever it may be. And so they have such strong, a strong desire to optimize the situation, to improve things, that it can sometimes come out in really aggressive ways. And because, you know, they let their emotions kind of get the best of them, and their emotion is frustration. And so that's what comes out. And so I think the best way to sort of tease that out is just to approach the person as a human being, and not in a sort of judgmental way, but just like, you know, tell me about, like, you know, what's going on, like what's bothering you about the team? What do you wish was better? And just give them a chance to let it out, because sometimes that's all they need. Is they just, you know, like I said, a lot of teams have this unspoken rule of, like, you know, you don't call things out, right? You don't say the truth. You say everything's fine, like we were talking about earlier. And so I think that's really frustrating to people who want things to be the most effective possible. And that's a lot of people who work in tech, you know, because they tend to care about efficiency and all of that. And so I think just giving them space to tell you what's wrong can be really powerful. Just asking those questions in a non-judgmental way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've certainly been a member of teams where there was that sort of dynamic of, you know, like I said, everything's great, everything's peachy keen, sunshine, rainbows, unicorns, all this. But yet there were members of the team, and I wasn't like this at the extreme, but just sort of this idea of, it's like nearing perfectionism. It's like you want it to be better, and you want it to be better. And when everyone's just talking about how good it is, and it's like, well, hang on a second here. If we're going to actually take it to the next level, we mm-hmm. need to actually uncover what our frustrations are, what our suffering might be, you know, how is the team suffering mm-hmm. as a whole? How is our performance suffering? You know, if you're building a product or an app, how can mm-hmm. we make this better? How are our users suffering? And yep. that if you don't talk about that kind of stuff, that can really start to kind of bubble up inside. And that, yeah, I've definitely known people who, you know, after conversations with them, where it was like, you know, they were the one who might have had that kind of blow up situation, that the reason that they did was exactly what you said, is that they didn't have that chance to say, but wait a second, you know, why don't we try it this way? Or, but wait a second, yeah, we're doing okay, but we could be doing a little bit better here. And so creating that space for that to happen, and that can create that internal suffering, especially for people who are, you know, super smart and super technical and want to strive for the best, which is a lot of people who work in tech.
Right? Yep, very true.
So that's a really good point about really just creating that space for them to kind of let it out, and to point out that, like, hey, you know, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. So cool. We've talked a lot about the hows, you know, how we can all be more compassionate. Is there anything else, you know, if you were to sort of put, you know, put a little, you know, the icing on the cake, or put a little cherry on top of it, what might it be in terms of just approaching our lives, approaching our work, approaching our teams and our teamwork and our leadership? What might be the cherry on top in terms of saying, okay, this is what makes it kind of more of a complete picture in terms of being compassionate and approaching our work in a compassionate way?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing really is to remember that you're dealing with human beings, you know, and like in yourself and the people you're working with. And a specific technique you can use is to, like, think about the fact that this person used to be a little baby, you know, like they were a little baby at some point. And, you know, that brings out feelings of empathy in most people that they're, you know, an innocent little baby that's, you know, very vulnerable in the world. And also that this person's going to die someday, you know, I mean, it's kind of morbid to think about, but I think, you know, it just reminds us that, you know, we're doing all this stuff while we're here and it's cool, whatever, but like ultimately we're born, you know, we do some stuff in between and then we die and we all share that in common. Yeah. And I think that kind of helps tear down barriers, because you remember that even this person who seems really different from me and I don't understand why they're so weird and why they are annoying me all the time, that, you know, they were born and they're going to die, and we probably have more in common than I'm giving them credit for.
That is really powerful. And I think it's powerful for a number of reasons, because it is as morbid as it is, it's the truth. It's the absolute truth. Nobody can argue with that. And it also gives us that perspective, which I think is sometimes that we've all fallen into, you know, you fall into the daily grind and you just look at stuff at the micro level, the nano level, especially mm-hmm. folks in tech tend to do that, because you have to, almost every little detail needs to be tweaked and dialed into 100%. But to really, really take a step back, that's the arc of our lives, that mm-hmm. that let's just keep that in mind, and that just that enough is often enough to just sort of remember that we're all in this together. We're not fighting. We're doing it together. Awesome. So where I'd like to turn to now, April, is the last question. And this is the question that I ask all of my podcast guests. And just to kind of preframe it, you can really, there's no right or wrong answers here. You can take this question however you like. But really what I'm curious about is, what's the biggest people-related challenge in your job?
Yeah, that is a good question. And I thought of two different directions to take it, or I'm thinking of two now, but I guess I'll give it this one. Honestly, for me, especially being a founder and running Compassionate Coding, the biggest people-related challenge really is managing myself and my own internal kind of working. And because it's, you know, I have to be in the right frame of mind to lead these, you know, workshops and to give presentations. And, you know, they're scheduled far in advance. So if I'm having some difficulties in my head, I can't just call in sick usually for like a keynote, you know, that's not usually how it works.
That's right.
And so you kind of have to do it anyway. And so, and it can be a struggle because, you know, like I go through all sorts of human things myself, and I struggle with like an inner critic that's really loud sometimes. And that's something that I have to work on. And so I think, you know, in order to be able to help others, you really have to take care of yourself. And so I think it's worth remembering that, you know, we're people too. Each one of us is a person too. And so sometimes our biggest challenges at the heart is really something about managing ourselves, you know. And that's one of the things we talk about in workshops, is kind of that self-management, self-awareness and self-management. And so I think that that can be one of the biggest struggles, just because it's just our lifelong kind of journey is to manage that. And that's probably what it is for me, I think.
And so you talked about the meditation and yoga and becoming vegan, that those are some places, it sounds like, where you're doing that self-management and taking care of yourself. Is there anything else? Do you have any other rituals or things that you do on a daily or weekly basis to make sure that you're keeping your proverbial pot as full as it possibly can be?
Yeah. Oh gosh, I have so many. But so some of the highlights, just because I used to not really care for myself like at all. Like, you know, because it's easy to get lost in coding and you just kind of forget what time it is and you don't even sleep and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so I've kind of done a full, like, you know, 180. And so now I do like over the top just self-care stuff. So like I do, I write in journals. So in the morning I do a kind of stream of consciousness that helps me get out some of my anxious thoughts that I might have upon waking up. At nighttime I do a gratitude journal. So, and I recommend this to everyone who has started doing it, like just loves it. So I write down, you know, a few things that happened that day that I'm grateful for, because even on really tough days, there's something to be positive about. So I try to remember that, because our brains have this negativity bias where we always focus on what's wrong. And I feel like this is especially true for people in tech, because we're looking for, you know, to troubleshoot stuff and to debug stuff and all that. But there's a lot of good stuff in the world too. And it's good to remind yourself of that. So I do that. I do the yoga meditation, and then I'm also into running. So, and that's something I used to hate doing. So that's kind of new in the past few years. I started running like ultra marathons. And for me, it's a very sort of spiritual thing in that I feel like I commune with nature. So anytime I can get out on the trail and run is nice. And I do that too when I'm traveling, like in different places. And then I live in San Diego, which is amazing. And I go to the beach as much as I can as well, because there's just something very peaceful about just watching the waves come in and leaving my phone at home and just kind of decompressing a bit. And so, yeah, it's, all of these things are important to me. And again, when I don't do them, because sometimes I do fall off and I stop doing them, I notice it in my life. Like I notice my shoulders are tensed up. Like I can feel it in my body that like I'm off. And so I think they're very important.
Yeah. It sounds like almost like they're essential to you at this point.
Yeah. I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm totally on board with all of this stuff. I do, mm-hmm. I don't do the running. I'm not a runner. I like walking, just being outside, you know, that's one mm-hmm. of the things that I've been more intentional about, like, especially as it starts to get a little bit colder here in New England, in the Boston area, it gets harder to get outside. So I've started to create that habit while it's kind of nice out. So then it's like, it's a habit, it's habitual. I need to go outside, and I have my layers. I'm New England born and raised. It doesn't matter if it's cold, I can go and take that. But certainly
that's
the journaling,
good.
the gratitude journal, totally on board with that too. It's something that I encourage all of my clients and everyone who I help to do, because yeah, if we don't do it intentionally, the negative thoughts are gonna kind of start coming up just automatically. Mm-hmm. It's what we're trained to do. Like we need to know, is this a threat or is it not? And it's just like, we don't live in that world anymore where a bear can just come and eat us. And hopefully most of us didn't do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's awesome. So it sounds like you're really embracing mindfulness and really embracing rituals that are going to keep your mind in a great place, so that when you go and do the keynotes, for example, you don't have to worry about, okay, am I in a good space or not? It's just something that comes that just happens on a day-to-day basis for you.
Yeah, because I really feel like that, you know, you talked about like filling up your cup, and it's so important because it's, you know, I really, every time I go up on stage or every time I go to a team and try to help them, like I'm trying to alleviate suffering there, and I want to give them all that I can, you know, I want to serve in the best way I can. And I can really only do that when I take the time to do all these mini rituals that I have in my life.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And so I have one more question, April, and this is sort of, I'm still forming it in my head. So it's kind of a stream of consciousness thing. But the last thing that I want to ask about is happiness, because as I'm looking through my notes, that's definitely one of the themes that we've talked about, you know, happiness in your life, you're happier, happy people. That's what Compassionate is about. Happy teams, happy coding. And so I'm wondering, I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit here, basically, what about for the people who say, well, happiness isn't like the number one thing, or, you know, is that really what we're cared about? What all we should care about is being happy, or being compassionate, or, you know, pick any of the words that we've used a bunch throughout our talk today. What do you, so essentially the question is more about, what do you say to the critics who say this stuff doesn't matter? It's not about being happy, it's about being productive, or it's not about being compassionate, it's about getting the work done. What would be your response to folks who might say that or be thinking that?
Yeah, so a couple things. One is, there's some research that shows that happier teams are more productive. So if somebody's talking about what matters is productivity, then I might share some of this research. The book I'm thinking of is The Optimistic Workplace by Sean Murphy. Mm-hmm. It's something like 10 to 30%, like teams that are happier, you know, they measured that in some way, were 10 to 30% more productive, something like that. And so, you know, sometimes you can tie it back to that. But then the other thing, and this comes from like the meditation stuff that I've done and reading on that sort of mindset, is detachment. So when I hear from critics that say stuff like that, sometimes, you know, I'll share the research that I have, but ultimately I have to be detached from the outcome. So I don't see it as my goal to try to convince everybody. And that's how I used to think about things. And I feel like that led to some suffering inside myself, because ultimately I can't control other people, nor would I really want to. And so being able to be detached from whether or not they actually are convinced is something that brings me great peace. And so I kind of put it out there. And what I actually encourage people to do more than trying to push stuff on them is I encourage them to get in touch with their own core values. But the trick is that I really do believe that most people, when they spend enough quiet time with themselves, they will find that one of their core values deep inside probably is compassion, just because, as you were talking about, it's kind of part of human nature. You know, we're wired to be compassionate and cruel. We have both within us. But, you know, I think that when people get in touch with their values, they often find that they want more meaning. They want, you know, they want to suffer less. I mean, that's pretty much a universal, that most people want to suffer less. And so I think that's kind of how I approach it. I say, well, you know, I encourage you to get in touch with your core values and live by those. And so I don't do the kind of hard sell, which is nice too. So like, that's the thing, is companies come to me and ask for compassionate coding services. And that is also a very peaceful way of doing it for me. So I don't have to go in and say, here's why you need to hire compassionate coding, because that's kind of that forceful way that I used to live. And so that's kind of how I go about it, is I make the argument, or like I present the facts, and kind of leave it up to people to do what they're going to do, because they're going to do that anyway. So I've just tried to make peace with that.
Even just hearing that, like I felt myself just sort of like sigh, like, you're right. it doesn't have to be that hard. And that is something that I struggle with a lot, you know, in terms of thinking about really being grippy to goals and really being attached to other people's outcomes that at the end of the day, we don't have control over. It's almost, it's silly to think that we do or that we can or that we'd want to, like you mentioned. And that this being compassionate and having that detachment from the outcome can apply in so many different areas of our life. Like you mentioned, you know, building a business and marketing or in sales, or whether we're talking about coding or whether we're just talking about our life and our relationships with others, that, yeah, at the end of the day, it's not about convincing other people. It's about having those conversations and creating the space for us, for those natural values to shine. And so it's a wonderful, wonderful point. And on that note, April, thank you so much for a wonderful conversation today. It's been great talking with you and geeking out with you about not only, coding and teamwork and leadership, but also about mindfulness as well. I'm really happy that the conversation turned in that way, because I think it's so, so important for everybody. So thank you for a great conversation today. It was wonderful talking with you.
Thank you too. Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.